everyone, and welcome to Season 2, Episode 7 of The Scoop. The day before a football game this week, joined alongside Matt Vender, Kyle Gauss, John DiCarlo, I'm Dalton Balthaser. How's everyone doing on this hump day?
It's good.
Good.
Hump day.
Yeah.
Like a little camel commercial. Remember that? You remember the camel commercial?
Yeah, Geico.
Oh, yeah. Where he's in an office, like he's in a cubicle?
Yeah,
I remember that.
It's good. Good 2012 reference right there.
2012. Matt, how you doing? You haven't spoken
yet.
Doing pretty well.
A little under the weather. I have a little cold. A little bit of the sniffles, but I'm doing okay.
The sniffles.
Matt's got the sniffles.
Through it.
What are you taking for the sniffles? Did you eat some chicken soup yet? Or?
Took cold medicine and was knocked out for like 13 hours last night.
You guys like NyQuil? Legitimately, I like NyQuil. But like, you get some weird dreams. Weird dreams with NyQuil, at least for me. I have weird dreams to begin with, but more intense. And I just wake up and it's 9 hours later, my arm's asleep.
we're off to a very interesting start. Yeah, NyQuil scares me. I have weird dreams. Last time I took NyQuil for a cold, I had a dream that I was in The Empire Strikes Back, in the scene where like the snow creatures, like on all fours, are like stomping through the snow.
Tauntauns.
Not the Tauntauns, like the big mechanical things.
Oh, the...
I forget what they're called.
The AT-ATs?
I think.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? They're on all fours.
Luke puts
and
the
I was like, I was Luke Skywalker, like on the ground trying to like dodge him. And then I woke up and I was like perpendicular on my bed.
In what world would you be Luke Skywalker?
I was like, well, I don't know if I was actually
you're
Luke
like
Skywalker,
a general
but
Akbar.
I was like.
You're more of like the.
That is so incredibly insulting.
He
had a disfigured face. He was
he was just a different creature. I'm sure he could have been very attractive in whatever species he is.
I mean, he was a respected general.
Exactly. He rose to the top of the rank.
Didn't the guy who played Admiral Akbar's voice, didn't he just die? Or am I making that up?
I have no idea. Laryngitis.
Bottom line is you told me that I looked like a creature.
Yeah. You guys saw Star Wars, right?
I have not.
Neither of you?
Oh,
really?
I'm done with this. This conversation's done.
Well, we haven't actually gotten anything sports.
Yeah,
well,
thanks for listening this week.
John looks like Admiral Akbar, and that's about it. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on. Temple had a game at the Link on Saturday. They defeated the Mustangs of Southern Methodist 45-20.
Didn't see a minute of it.
Ponies. Don't tell people that. We did.
I was away at a wedding.
Three of us honored our commitments. And
I was at a
it
wedding.
Was in the New York Times, Andrew's wedding.
Yeah.
I read that.
And on the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You got a shout out and everything.
Spike's probably looking for a job.
Yeah.
Please, Andrew.
Yeah. My buddy Andrew Goldstein, is a TV writer up in New York, has a podcast. He got married up in the Hamptons. It was beautiful. Beautiful wedding. That's why I was not there.
Meanwhile, while you were in the Hamptons, we were at Lincoln Financial Field.
Yeah.
As Dalton was setting up.
Yeah, sorry.
For a game where Temple used a strong rushing attack to defeat SMU and didn't look good from the beginning, though. You know, P.J. Walker, third play of the game, throws a pick six to NCAA interceptions leader Jordan Wyatt. And I was a little concerned from there. But what were you guys thinking after that pick six to start? Were you a little concerned, or did you think they'd be able to right the ship immediately?
I mean, I think you were a little concerned, right? Like, coming into the game, you kind of didn't really know how bad SMU was. They haven't really played anybody of significance at this point, other than whoever they lost to. But yeah, it was less, I think, about the opponent, more about the fact that PJ just looked like he made a bad decision, right? Later on, when you actually reviewed the film, you can kind of tell that, okay, Marshall Allen probably shouldn't have allowed that to happen. He probably should have gotten between Walker and the defender and Wyatt. But yeah, it was concerning at the time, but then it never really got better as far as Walker was concerned. He kind of struggled the rest of the game.
Yeah, I guess it was a little bit concerning, but Matt Rhule pointed out yesterday at his Tuesday press conference, and he said it was on the receiver, Marshall Ellick, and he didn't name drop, but he also said it was on the offensive coordinator, Glenn Thomas, which, you know, you don't hear too often.
Yeah.
Maybe Rhule called
out.
That
was on the receiver and the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
All right.
So, and then on the second pick.
And then Julio Jones chimed in. He's like, oh, man, I kind of like Glenn Thomas. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but that was a little interesting. But, yeah. So
Glenn Thomas got called out after putting up 45 points?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, but his running game was very efficient. Raquel Armstead had a career day, 159 yards, 2 touchdowns. On, I think, 15 carries, 15 or 16 carries, something like that. You know, he was mostly the bully back towards the end when they were up quite a bit over SMU and just looking to control some clock. But what did you guys see from Armstead on Saturday? I know I wrote about this for the website, you know, the week before against Charlotte, but how effective can Armstead be in filling in for Thomas, who Matt Rhule said yesterday he doesn't want to give, you know, 20, 25 carries?
I think he can be very effective, right? I mean, he's kind of shown that coming into the season, even before Thomas missed the first couple games, they said, we basically view it as having two starters. Armstead's going to get more than his fair share. I think the kind of key to his production the rest of the year and the team's production is whether or not you actually get him the carries or not. That's just words, you're actually doing it. Because against SMU, sure, he has 15 carries, and a lot of that kind of came as the game was out of hand, and he kind of put up some big numbers in that big rush at the end when they were probably already up 20. But then against Charlotte, the actual breakdown was he only got 5 carries. Against Penn State, he didn't get that many carries. It's just been Thomas. And then this week, they finally broke back. So now I'll be curious to see going forward whether or not it is a, okay, let's get Jihad 18 carries and Armstead 12, or if it's going to be, let's get Jihad 22 carries and Armstead 5.
Do you think it's more or less like trying to keep Jihad, you know, fully ready for the games? Because towards the end of last year, he started to wear down. You could definitely see that.
Yeah, absolutely wore down as the year went on last year. Part of me thinks it's that, and part of me thinks in the beginning, at least with the first couple games back, well, you were kind of knocking off a little bit of rust, right? Like he hadn't been playing. He hadn't played at all until the Penn State game, so you kind of want to get him involved. I'll be interested also going forward. For last week, for the first time since Jihad came back, they didn't really do anything weird with him. They lined him up at running back. They didn't put him out wide, or if they did, they never really targeted him. They kind of stepped back from that. We want to get involved in every facet of the offense. So.
Yeah, and yesterday Matt flat out said, he said, I really don't want to get Jihad above, you know, 20 carries, which is, I think, what they had kind of been targeting coming into the year. And I mean, he's their future. I mean, they've liked Armstead since they got him. You know, when they recruited him out of Millville High School, there were a lot of people who came through to see. A guy named, I think it's Rob Ennis, was their lead back. Then Rob got in trouble, was headed to Purdue, had his scholarship revoked. And Fran Brown, you know, told people that, you know, I came in and I liked Rockwall better. And he responded to that. You know, Rockwall used to tell people, like, I respect the Temple because I was sort of the second option. They would come in to see Rob, but they would also kind of come in to see me. Fran Brown was the guy that came in and said, we like you. You know, he's probably not as great as a lateral guy. I mean, they're two different backs in some ways, but you can see how explosive he is. He's tough, and so, you know, he's their future at that position. So I think he's probably just evolving right at the pace that they want him to. And as you guys have already said, I mean, yeah, he definitely wore down. I mean, taking a shot to the ribs at Notre Dame or against Notre Dame last year probably didn't help. And then he got hurt in the bowl game. But I think they're probably getting closer to or reaching that target mark for the number of carries they want to get him, the number of carries that they want to get Jihad, but, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting because somebody after the game on Saturday basically asked him, like, hey, is it kind of hard, you know, preparing for this? You don't know how many carries you're going to get. Jihad can come in. Does that get you out of rhythm? And Armstead basically says, like, I did that my entire high school career. Like, it was basically a two running back situation with Ennis. Before Ennis, I think, ended up at Rhode Island, and I think he dropped out of that, too. So, wherever you are, Rob Ennis, we're thinking about you. But yeah, but Armstead always had kind of had that situation, so he's gotten used to it, taking advantage of the carries he does get. Mm-hmm. So,
how concerned are you guys? I didn't see the game with my own eyes, but and again, as you've said, the, you know, the running game took over. How concerned are you about PJ? You know, that you guys have said there were a couple of passes that should have been picked off and weren't. Is this just a game where, is this just kind of a typical, you know, kind of blip of a game for PJ where he might bounce back this week, or are you seeing some things that are really make it look like he's regressing?
I personally was talking about it today on the Temple Sports Hour with WHIP Radio. I'm concerned because he stepped up big time against Penn State, but to me it seems like he's one of those players that, like, steps up in the big games against big teams, as opposed to, you know, Charlotte and stuff like that. He doesn't really show up. Like the stat line last week, 7 for 18, 128 yards, a touchdown and 2 picks. You know, he's not really completing a lot of passes. That mostly was due to the fact that the run game was just working so well for them, they were able to use it. But he's only completing 55% of his passes, which isn't terrible. His goal, I think, was 60 to 65% in the offseason.
70, yeah.
But nevertheless, I just don't think that he looks the same. You know, he doesn't. He's not looking to run, and You know, some of the decisions he makes to me, like, are questionable. Like, he's rolling outside the pocket, and there's, like, no one open. And he's, like, throwing it into, like, 2 to 3 deep coverage. So it's, like, you know, just throw the ball away, you know, make better decisions. But I guess you can say that with any quarterback, being nitpicky. But I just think, you know, with conference coming up, he needs to step up, I think, especially this week.
I'm concerned, too. I mean, unless they can run him a little bit more. Matt Rhule kind of talked about that a little bit yesterday. At his Tuesday press conference, kind of talked about, you know, unleashing PJ and what that means. And, you know, I think in order for PJ to maybe break loose a little bit, they might have to run him a little bit. Towards the end of last season, I think when they played Memphis last year, I think he ran for 49 yards on like 7 carries. So they were able to run him a little bit last year against Memphis, and they had some success. And I think they're going to have to at least try and sprinkle that in a little bit. I know Matt's worried about that non-throwing shoulder that he separated last year against Penn State. But I think they're going to have to run him a little bit, try and just open things up a little bit. Because when they run him, he's going to have open receivers. He's just going to have more opportunities in the passing game. If they can't run him and they're just too scared he's going to get hurt, I don't know. I don't know if he's the answer. I think they could be in trouble if they continue to be too cautious and don't run him at all.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one thing throughout this, I guess, 4-year career, PJ Walker now, is you can usually kind of tell how he's going to be in the game pretty early. Like, PJ either looks bad early or he looks good going forward. The other thing is there's never really been trends with Philip Walker, right? Like, some days he'll have a bad game, the next week he has a great game. Looked great against Penn State, and he has a bad game. It'll be interesting for me going to this game against Memphis. It's easy to say, okay, we got to unleash PJ, and PJ has to have this great game. They're going up against a 3-4 defense, which they've struggled against before. Usually with a 3-4 defense, a lot of times people just want to pound the ball in the middle. You kind of take advantage of the fact that the defensive line is less crowded than it usually is. So I'll be curious to see, coming in that first drive tomorrow night, it'll be tonight by the time this podcast airs, whether or not they make a conscious effort, okay, let's air the ball out, or if it is just conservative, see what Armstead can do, see what Thomas can do.
Go ahead, John. I was just going to say, so when I asked Matt yesterday at his press conference to assess PJ's play, he talked a lot about that, and then he said, we just need to turn him loose. And as Matt was alluding to, I just said, what do you mean by turning him loose? Without giving away the game plan, does that mean getting him out of the pocket a little bit more? And he kind of offered a pretty detailed response for a couple minutes. So here's what Matt had to say about PJ, and really kind of just dissected his performance last Saturday, and just talked about a lot of the different things that he tries to balance out and looking at him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, you know, like, you come out, you're 8 for your first date, and you start feeling good about yourself. You know what I'm saying? So what does that mean? Like, well, he comes out this first play last week, he hits a naked for 6 yards, right? And then we throw double slants. Kiss dots, he picks it. PJ comes off laughing. Okay, here we go. We come right back. You know, we go 3 and out. He hits a corner route to Kirkwood for like 20. You know what I'm saying? Then he comes out and we have a run pass option. He can throw a touchdown to Roman. He hands it off to Jihad, who walks in. Then he hits Roman, that ball down to the one. You know, I think then, like, maybe we do a better job of just staying with that stuff, you know. But then the defense, they're going fast. The defense is getting a little bit tired, so I say, all right, put 2 backs on the field, let's pound them and give the defense, you know, because, again, I don't care about any of this. I just want to win, right? The head football coach at Temple, I'm not the offensive coordinator, I'm with the defense core. So the defense is a little bit tired. So I say, let's try to take some clock on this drive, right? So we do that. You know, Raquel has a couple big runs. So now PJ goes about 10 minutes without throwing the ball, right? So if all I'm thinking about is our stats and PJ, then I would just keep throwing the ball the whole day, right? But I'm just trying to win the game. You know, I'm trying to be up 35-7. As best we can. So I say it with like a little bit of a tone, you know, because I know you know I love you, but it's because, like, it's so hard to manage winning and manage PJ, right? So getting him outside the pocket. You know what? People don't let him get outside the pocket. The first couple games, we were like 15 to 15 on nakeds. We run a naked this game. They were running up the field to take him away. Now, what does that leave open? We can run inside zone. That's why you notice it, like Raquel, all of a sudden, the first couple of games, couldn't get a runoff. I mean, we hand the ball off to Raquel now, guys. He's running for 20, 15. So it's this fine line. I'm struggling with, to be quite honest with you, too, because I know we've got to get him in rhythm. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you start taking a lot of shots. And if you hit him, great. Like, he hits Ventel. But then, you know what? Then you go another 5 minutes without throwing the ball. So it's a fine, fine line. Should we run him more? I would love to run him more. I really would. I just, you know, kids played the last 2 years with a bad shoulder, and it's hard to run him. But maybe we need to. I know he comes to me every day and says, you need to run me more. And, you know, but it's just a matter of, you put him in harm's way or not. So That's like the most honest answer you'll ever get from me, because that's really what keeps me awake at night. Like all these conversations, what keeps me awake at night. You want your quarterback to play really well to be able to win, but you also want the defense to play well. So you have to manage a team, to me. And this week, PJ's gonna have to play. When you go on the road, your quarterback has to play great. So we'll have to get him to play great.
When you listen to Matt there, not too surprising, because again, there are some obvious concerns there. And I think at this point, you know, maybe what you see is what you get. You know, he's gonna have some good games. He's gonna have some 9-for-21 games and stuff like that. But Matt very rarely throws his quarterback under the bus. And I think he says, you know, that guy's won a lot of games for us. He's done a lot for us. And so I get that. I'm not surprised to hear him take a kind of a long view look at things. He makes some decent points in saying, okay, well, you know, if the running game's working for us, I'm not gonna, you know, be overly concerned about making sure PJ gets 300 yards. But obviously, like he said near the end of that answer there, when you go on the road, your quarterback absolutely has to play well. So now if they go down to Memphis and win on the road against what looks to be a pretty good Memphis team, yeah, he'll derive a lot of confidence from there. But I think the thing that has everybody concerned is, okay, you're a senior, your decision-making process, your decision-making, you know, skills should be a little bit better at this point right now. And even when he does get out of the pocket, I think people sometimes, I hate to say this, I think people kind of overvalue his speed. I think he's fast, but he's not, I mean, it's a bad comparison. He's not Greg Ward. You know, he's fast, but he's not like a super dynamic.
He's not like Vic. He's more like Marcus Vic.
Oh, that's a bad.
But, yeah.
PJ's a nice guy.
I also, yeah.
Marcus Vic is not.
Maybe he's just bad on social media. You never know. And I think
there's hope.
PJ's kind of had the luxury last year. You saw the lack of it in 2014 is when Robbie Anderson wasn't there for that 2014 mm-hmm. season. He no longer, even when he bought time with his pocket, didn't have that wide receiver that really kind
right.
of got separation in the backfield. Not backfield, and then the secondary.
Yeah, secondary.
So I'll be curious to see if with Ventel healthy this week and going forward, if he becomes that guy. He's not Robbie Anderson fast, but he has the know-how to kind of get back there. And then he still kind of needs that John Christopher, that Ryan Alderman. And Broderick Ansey showed it at points, but then he's also shown the ability to drop a ball and not get open. So PJ hasn't had his safety valves that he's had in years past, but guess what? That's not going to change. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to have to adapt this season. So.
Yeah. But he does have his full arsenal of weapons, and it's kind of the first time, I guess, all year that he's going to have all those guys together with Jihad and Ventel back. Yeah, these are basically the weapons he has now. Everybody's healthy, so now, you know, it's just going to be a matter of him hitting these guys and connecting with them.
Yeah, and it's a Memphis team that he can put up numbers against. They're going to be able to run the ball against this Memphis team. Ole Miss shredded them mm-hmm. running-wise, but even beyond that, Memphis' numbers, I think, are probably make their defense look a little better than they actually are just because of the level of competition they've gone up against. Bowling Green, Kansas, like, they've played some bad teams. Mm-hmm. So PJ's
But in their defense, they did what they were supposed to against them, really beat them pretty badly.
Sure.
Do you think...
We can agree upon that. Sure.
Do you think that this week Memphis focuses a little more on stopping Temple's rushing attack because that's been their strong suit and make Walker try to beat them? Do you think that's something
we're
fighting
against?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Temple's rushing offense has been productive. They would do this with a number of backs, including Isaiah Wright and the Wildcat, which, again, another thing I keep saying is it'll be interesting to see if they keep rolling that out. They ran it a lot against SMU, but I don't know how much of that was, well, the game's already in hand, let's just see what Isaiah can do and how much of that's going to be actual part of their offense. But yeah, I think if you could shut down Thomas, you can shut down Armstead, you can shut down Wright, and you actually force Walker to throw the ball against you, yeah, it could be a bad day for Temple. Even though Walker has had, if you look at his stat lines against Memphis, some pretty successful games.
Mm-hmm. And it's another, on, you know, defending them, it's another tempo team, fast-paced
yeah,
team.
Everybody's tempo.
But a team that's put up, I'll give them their credit. I mean, you lose a guy to the NFL, you lose your head coach, and they really haven't missed much of a beat
right.
offensively. You know, Sean Chandler's out for, you know, what Matt said, what, indefinitely. Told you guys on Saturday that Julian Taylor is out for the year, Sharif Finch is out for the year,
yeah.
Kareem Ali is still out. Yeah, I think if they go on the road on a short week and win this game, I think they derive a lot of confidence from it. And you can say, all right, maybe they really are a factor in the East. And you won't know that, obviously, until you play USF in a few weeks, but I think this has a chance to be a pretty transformational game for them in terms of, like, really seeing how good they can be in this league.
Yeah. And you're going up, like you said, I mean, you're going up against an offense that can really air it out. They're 20th in the FBS right now, a passing offense. They're led by a guy that actually Temple was involved with recruiting a little bit in the 2016 class, Riley Ferguson. He's from Coffeyville College in Kansas. And he's really, really played well. So it's going to be interesting to see defensively how these young, inexperienced DBs handle Ferguson, especially without Sean Chandler, who's going to be out a while. Matt Rule said he's out indefinitely, so he could be out 3 weeks, could be out for the season. We'll have to see. But Ferguson's been a guy that's really torn it up. He's over 1,100 yards, 11 touchdowns, 5 picks in the 4 games. And he's really, really looked good. He's 6'4", 210. So this is going to be, you know, one of Temple's biggest challenges offensively going up against this Memphis team that can really air it out and put points on the board.
Yeah, Ferguson's numbers aren't the greatest when you look at the Ole Miss game, but that's because they got down pretty deep. They ended up chucking it. One thing that kind of worked for them last week against Ole Miss was, even though he's not the fastest guy in the world, when they got into the red zone, they ran the read option with him a little bit. He scored 2 rushing touchdowns last week. He's up a guy that can really air it out. He's averaging like 9 yards an attempt. He's successful. I mean, there's a reason he was an SEC quarterback before he went to community college. So, yeah. So, but as far as inexperienced as Temple secondary is, they've had a decent amount of success this year. They haven't really been burnt that often. Against Penn State, they gave up some numbers, but the Temple offense, you're going to get that. Other than that, they looked pretty decent against SMU. They shut down Cortland Sutton. So, yeah, it'll be interesting.
Prediction time. What do you guys think?
I was on a Memphis podcast last night, and I actually said Memphis 34, Temple 21. I'm changing that a little bit. I still think they lose. I still can't see going. If they do win, transformational game, like you said. I don't think it's a must-win by any stretch. But if they do win this game, all of a sudden, with Cincy and UConn playing this. Cincy and UConn are both 0-2. They're playing each other this week. One team is basically going to be out of the division race at that point. They're going to fall to 0-3. If you somehow win this game, you pretty much set it up that Temple, and it's going to almost be a two-horse race for the division again with South Florida. That being said, I'll say Memphis 31, Temple 24.
You get any guest appearance fees for your appearance on the podcast? The Memphis podcast?
A wealthy man.
Predictions 1 point off mine, but the other way around.
I'll go Memphis 45, Temple 28.
I just can't see that. I mean, yeah, maybe I could. We'll see.
Ball.
45.
I got Memphis
38-27. I think Kyle talks about how he's trending before a game. I'm trending positive for Temple here. I think they're going to win this game 31-23. I think Memphis is going to be driving late with a chance to tie the game with a two-point conversion. I think they're going to... Well, you can't say they're going to rebound after a win, but I think yes, they lost a lot of senior leadership from last year, but I think there are enough guys around on this team who remember what it was like to prepare on a short week, what a win on a short week did for them, and obviously they lost Notre Dame the following week, but that was a big moment for them to go on the road at a time when everybody was looking at them to kind of fall into sort of like a trap game mode before they played Notre Dame. I think they play well. I think they get a couple turnovers, and I think they win this game on the road 31-23, and I think we look back at this being an important win for them that kind of like sparked them moving forward. But that's just me.
If they do somehow win this game, then you get 10 days off until your next one, until you have to go to UCF. That kind of sets you up in a good position. They beat UCF, and you got that South Florida game at home, and that's pretty much the division championship game. So, yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm changing it. Still not a must-win. Could be a very big game for Temple season.
So, a lot of big developments for the basketball program. And, again, in the past we've talked about, you know, some of the ebbs and flows of recruiting with the basketball program. And now, in early October, Fran Dunphy has pretty much, you know, unless something else develops that we don't know about, Temple has wrapped up its 2017 recruiting class, and it appears to be a pretty good one. So, since we last spoke to you guys last week, Dre Perry from Baltimore Poly, committed Friday, and then Justin Hamilton committed on Monday, and that's it. So you got a 4-member class. Looks like they got pretty much, for the most part, everybody they targeted, and really, again, a great job by Fran and his staff. When you look at how things looked at one point with Dwayne Killings leaving on pretty much the very first day of the live period in July, and Dwayne had been lead guy on J.P. Mormon. He'd been the lead guy on Dre Perry. They had to make up some ground there. Chris Clark comes in. Aaron McKee you know, we talked about the fact that Aaron kind of needed to be the lead guy on a couple of recruits in the future to kind of get some buzz going about him. And all of that stuff happened. You know, they made up some ground with Trey Perry. You know, it seemed like Virginia Tech, you know, was kind of messing around with pushing his official visit back. And so what'd you say?
They slow-cooked him.
Slow-cooked him. And that did not obviously work out well for them. And they had Hamilton in for a visit a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, just taking a look at this, I mean, they got a lot of needs and pretty much did what they needed to do.
Yeah, and I think the question kind of becomes, is, well, what's the difference? What's the difference between this year and previous years that they were able to have success on most, if not all, of their main targets kind of going into this year? And I think a lot of it kind of has to be attributed to Aaron McKee's growth as an assistant coach. I think he kind of realized the amount of work that has to go in to actually recruiting these kids. You can't just walk in and say, I won the sixth man of the year 15 years ago.
But in Aaron's defense, I don't think he's ever thought that that was going to be the case.
I think he has. No, I don't think. No, but yeah. But I don't think you fully understand the amount of work that goes into the job until you're actually doing the job, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. I think part of it's that, and I think part of it is, especially when it comes down to some of the other recruits in next year's class and the class after, I think Chris Clark makes a bit of a difference, mm-hmm. too. And then, not to say that he's as established of a recruiter as Dwayne Killings was, but he's somebody that's done it for 3 or 4 years. He's somebody that mm-hmm. at least knows of these kids, had some relationships with these kids, especially with J.P. Mormy. Tried recruiting him to Campbell before he realized that maybe he was a better player than Campbell. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think Temple might slowly be working its way into having two pretty decent recruiters on staff.
I think the other important piece of it is, again, for, you know, and coaches will say that they don't, you know, they don't live to please the media and reporters, which I totally understand, but this week you've seen some of the national guys like Jeff Borzello, some other guys saying, like, great week, great couple weeks for Fran Dunphy. Fran Dunphy's on fire right now. And, you know, people haven't been saying that over the past couple of years. And when you start getting two or three or four guys in a row to say yes to you, again, it creates some buzz. And I talked to J.C. Zemble, who's the publisher of the NC State Rivals site. He's a big J.P. Mormon fan. He'd seen him live several times and thinks Temple got a steal there. People seem to be pretty high on Hamilton's athletic ability, a kid who was a USA basketball guy early on. And at one point, Eric Bossy said, Eric Bossy's the national analyst for Rivals for basketball recruiting. And at one point, I guess, was in the Rivals 150 before he dropped out of it. Again, you hear this all the time, his defense is ahead of his offense. He's a good shot blocker, but athletically, you know, has a lot of potential. And then obviously Dre Perry, I think, is a huge get for him. And at one point, looked like he was maybe a Virginia Tech lean after Killings left, and they made up a lot of ground to get him there.
Yeah, I think the difference kind of feeling-wise for this class is, even though last year on paper and, you know, the year before,
a couple top 150 kids.
They've had decent recruits, right? Like, you got Shiz Olsen, you got Trey Lowe, you got Quentin Rose coming. You've had back-to-back pretty decent classes mm-hmm. on paper. I think the difference between this year's class and last year's class is, last year's class, they were kind of scrambling a little bit. They got Quentin Rose, who was a priority, but then they kind of had to, once they missed out on Tony Carr, had to go get Alani Moore, had mm-hmm. to, for lack of a better phrase, almost luck their way into Damian Moore from some personal connections. This year's class, they kind of identified, outside of like the Mo Bambas of mm-hmm. the world, like the huge recruits they were never going to get, they kind of identified some priorities, and they got those priorities. Mm-hmm.
And again, at a time when there was a lot of transition too.
Yeah. All right. Looking at these four recruits for Temple, who do you guys think makes the biggest impact in the near future?
Well, I think it's Dre Perry, in my opinion. I mean, I might be a little bit biased, John and I might be a little bit biased because he's the only guy. He's one of the only guys that we've seen live. But watching him live, he just physically he looks like a guy that's going to be able to come in and help right away. He's just so smooth, can handle the ball, can run the offense. I think he's going to be a guy that just comes in and helps contribute right away. You're going to be you might be replacing Josh Brown after this season. You don't know if you're going to have Trey Lowe back. So the depth at guard will probably be deep, and he'll be going up against a lot of guys. But I really think Dre just has it. And I think he'll be able to come in and play right away.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with Dre Perry. I think just kind of in the sake of having more than just us praising Dre Perry for the next 10 minutes, I would also say I think J.P. Mormon is an interesting guy just because he's more of like that glue guy that you would expect to see on like a good team, right? Mm-hmm. And he's almost 6'8", 6'7". He can probably play the 2, 3, or 4, mm-hmm. maybe a smaller 4 like Rutler used to play in Fran Dunphy's offense. So I kind of think he's the type of guy that you'll see come in, and as he becomes a four-year guy, he's probably like a two-year starter, two-year bench guy, kind of works his way into it. I'd expect to see J.P. Morman in the rotation right away.
Yeah, and then I guess looking down the line, maybe the highest ceiling, highest potential guy here might be Hamilton. Yeah. You know, again, a few people I've talked to have said he's really got a chance to really, really kind of grow into his body. I mean, he's a legit, you know, 6'10", 190, has to get stronger, but getting some exposure to USA basketball has helped, I'm sure. And, you know, I'm sure Temple fans, you know, recently you think, oh, 6'10", 190, oh boy, I hope he's not another Devontae Watson. I don't know, just again, I have yet to talk to this kid, I have yet to meet this kid, but you know, the reports you hear that he's a very hard worker, and you know, McKee liked him a lot, and they needed, you know, they kind of needed another player like that. Not to say that Damian Moore isn't athletic, Ernest might eventually be, you know, not necessarily a true back to the basket guy, but more of a true five, a guy who can take charges and rebound. And it sounds like Hamilton's really a guy that can really get up and down the floor and is just really, really long. And you know, so if now they're set up where, you know, if Ernest stays healthy, if Damian Moore stays healthy, Hamilton's a guy that you can maybe bring along a little bit more slowly, but a really intriguing player to have with that size and that length and that athleticism.
Yeah, and he's a guy that's actually played, you know, against decent competition. He was in USA basketball. He played for Team United and EYBL. Like, they were out there. When Devontae came out of Western PA, he was playing against, like, you, me, and Dalton. Like, it was...
I got some size.
It's not 6'10" size. When were those games?
That's why he won so easily. We were expecting you to be there and just stall the night. Yeah, so I think Hamilton's, that probably has the highest ceiling. I just think it's interesting that we went around the circle and we named the three people that, and we left out the one that's a top 150 recruit.
Yep. Yeah.
Like Napier, Louis, as far as rivals concerned, is the most talented of them all. Mm-hmm. Had some of the bigger offers of them all. Mm-hmm. It kind of dwindled towards the end, but his recruitment was probably the highest profile, and he was the cornerstone of this class.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the reason we don't maybe mention him is, I mean, I think the ranking is what it is, and the offer list is what it is, but, I mean, when it came down to things, I don't know if the schools that were recruiting him, you know, was basically Temple,
sure,
and
but
Purdue.
I think that's kind of basketball recruiting in general. Right?
Yeah.
By the time you get towards the end, a lot of those offers you had aren't there anymore because, you know, you're only taking 2, 3, 4 guys a class.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not to diminish the fact that at one point, you know, UConn was recruiting him. At one point, since he was recruiting him.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah.
And another kid who looks strong, very aggressive, can drive to the rim. Probably more of a 2 than a 1 right now, but it's not bad to have that type of any sort of combo guard in your program. And again, up at Roselle Catholic, he's got some great players on his team. He's going to be consistently playing for the most part against some very, very good teams up in North Jersey. So again, he's coming from a very competitive, you know, fertile recruiting ground in the country. So, and now again, you know, when was the last time that they wrapped up a class this early? And now you can get a head start in 2018, 2019 guys, and it'll be fun to see how these guys progress through their senior seasons now.
Showing you how dumb I am, I didn't realize that J.P. Morman's first name was Jakar until yesterday, despite the fact that his Twitter profile is Jakar, like _P. Or Jaguar.
I mean...
I had no idea. I thought it was just misspelled Jaguar for a while, legitimately.
It's not your finest hour. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you there. But
all right, it's time for our sometimes serious and sometimes silly mailbag this week. It looks like it's more of a serious type of mailbag this week.
Extremely serious.
Extremely serious, which, you know.
I am serious. Don't call me Shirley. Do you guys get that reference?
I don't.
Matt?
No, I don't.
Pick the wrong
date. Do you?
Huff and glue.
All right. At least Kyle Sr. playing. And in fairness, it came out, what, 1976? Something like that.
It's like 20 years before I was born. 20 years.
Yeah, 1980.
Was it 1980?
Yeah.
Still 17 years before I was born.
Yeah, long time. So the first question comes from the message boards from Damnals. You may cover these during the program, but if not, here are some questions. Injury report on Big Earn. I'm assuming Ernest Aflakpe.
Yeah.
Is that who he's talking about? Okay. Will he be ready to take the next step to replace Jalen Bond? Last year, he never looked like he was 100% to me. How's Josh Brown coming along? Will Philip Walker rebound from his mediocre SMU game? Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Lots of ground to cover there.
So the first question.
injury report on a Flack P. Will he be ready to fill in for Jalen Bond this year?
I mean, by all indications, I mean, I think he's healthy. I mean, you know, so coming out of Archbishop Carroll, he had the torn meniscus and the one knee. I can't remember if it was the he missed basically his entire senior season at Archbishop Carroll, playing for Paul Moravanchuk, who had played for Fran Dunphy at Penn. So he missed pretty much his entire senior season. And then last year he sprained the other knee. So, yeah, he was, you know, he's right. He was never completely healthy. Again, from what I've seen, what I've heard, he appears to be healthy. He's been, you look at him, he's a physically imposing guy. He's a strong guy. One of the things that Fran talks about a lot, and Paul Romanchik had talked about this a lot when he was at Carroll, he's very good at taking charges. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they hadn't realized, I feel like it's been a couple years since they've had a guy that has, like, done little things like that to impact the game in a certain way. Maybe Rodlier did that for you or somebody like that. But, yeah, appears to be healthy. And, you know, again, if they have anybody who can display some semblance of playing with his back to the basket, post people up and rebound, I don't know that he'll be as prolific a rebounder as Jalen was, but he's taller, so he's got a shot. So, we'll be at practice a little bit more frequently over the next few weeks. But as far as I know, he's healthy and ready to contribute, and he'll be a key piece to what they have to do this year. He's going to have to play a lot and probably start.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to play a lot. I can't really see him being, at least at this point in his career, with, like I said, they have a little basketball experience because of injuries. I can't really see him stepping in and playing 32, 35 minutes a game.
They'll probably try to bring him along a little more.
I kind of always envisioned more like Michael Eric's sophomore year, where he started, but you know he pretty much only played like 20 minutes a game, mm-hmm. 18 minutes a game. I kind of see that for Ernest.
You might have to. I know fans might not like hearing this that much, but you might have to slide Obi over to the five a lot. Mm-hmm. Although Ernest will probably start. You know, he's only going to be on the four, maybe 20 to 25 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. So you slide over Obi to the five, and maybe have Dingle at the four. But I think those are kind of going to be the looks that you see. I don't think you're going to see Ernest putting up double doubles on a regular basis.
It's going to be hard for him to do that with Mark Williams playing 39 minutes a game.
Yeah. Well, maybe Mark Williams will just replace Jalen Bond. No love for Mark.
I think he'll rebounding have a role on this team.
He's gonna have to have a role on the team. But
I'd be less with what Matt just described. Obi moving to the five doesn't upset me nearly as. I'm sorry, Dingle playing the four doesn't upset me nearly as much as Obi playing the five. I think Dingle can play the four a little bit. I think he's versatile enough to kind of play one through four, not at an all-star level at any of those positions, but enough to contribute. I think you're doing Obi a huge disservice if you have to play him at center.
Absolutely, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Damian Moore's going to play a little bit this year, but you know, when you get into conference play, I don't think you're going to be throwing Damian Moore out there a lot. I think it's going to be they're going to have to play Obi at the five, and it's not ideal, but it's just how it's going to be.
The other thing too, I think they'll just probably be cautious with Ernest just because if you have anybody who's like 6'9" and up who's had knee injuries, you're going to probably try to take it easy with them. They tried to take it easy with them last year, you know, when he hurt the other knee. So, but obviously we'll have to play more. But
you just do what college basketball teams have been doing for the last 15 years. You play one big, you play four wings and guards, and you win a national championship out.
Kyle House synthesizing everything for us.
Next question is,
how's Josh?
Yeah, how's Josh Brown coming along?
Well, I mean, I would have to. So you would have to figure that he plans to play at some point this year. Otherwise, they would not have taken four guys with this class. If Josh was planning to redshirt and come back next year and be a redshirt senior, you wouldn't have a scholarship for one of these recruits coming in unless somebody gets run off or somebody, you know, something else happens. And as of now, we can really only say that that's not the case. So I've been told that Josh is at least in practice, and he's posted some stuff on social media that looks encouraging. I mean, anybody could, you know, follow him on Twitter or Instagram. It looks like he's at least working his way back. I was told this week that he's not been a full practice participant, but he's doing drills on the side, which is a pretty good step considering he ruptured his Achilles back in, what, May, right?
Late May. So it's basically been 4 months.
Yeah, so he's 4 months into it. So, we'd have to imagine he's going to play at some point, probably not in November, maybe not in December, maybe January. You know, we'll find out more in the coming weeks. But, yeah, it looks like he's going to play at some point this year.
Next question is, will Philip Walker rebound from his mediocre SMU game?
I mean, I would have to think he would, right?
The
question is how much.
I kind of have a decent feeling about Philip going into this. Mm-hmm. I kind of think that
Memphis' defense isn't so stout that it's going to be like, oh, he needs to play a lights-out game more to have a chance. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to have a decent game. I don't think he's going to be asked to do all that much. I don't think they're going to throw it 40 times.
I think he does have a bounce back. I think he's inconsistent. He's hard to predict. I think he does have a big game. I think he does what he's done before, and that's play well in a big road game.
Stand by my statement that I think you'll know by the second quarter. I think by the time the first quarter is over, you'll have a general feel of is PJ going to be able to exploit this defense, mm-hmm. or is this going to be a long day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's good, because then you can determine where not to go to bed, because this is a late game. Yeah, I don't know.
Come on.
8 p.m., which means it's done at like 11:30, which means after I kind of, you know, I tweet out things, I'm probably in bed like midnight. Hey, I am taking Friday off, not because of this, just because I want a three-day weekend. So I'll be up there. I'll be drinking coffee, though, to have to stay up that late.
Sound like me.
But I'm
30 yet, man.
Don't act like you were the barometer for where somebody should be in their late 20s.
I'm just saying, you
I'm just tired,
energy.
Man. I get up early. I work long hours.
So John sleepy. Seems to be a night owl.
John also comes into work like 10:15.
No, I don't.
I'm at work.
I do not
right
come into work at 10:15.
It's me. They're unlocking the doors to the building. I'm saying, hey, guys, how are you? I'm coming in. That's not entirely true, but I work
long
hours.
Sounds like
one
big cliche. First guy in, last guy to leave.
No, first guy to leave. First in, first out. I express like a little more concern with Walker. I think like
back to the actual question.
Yeah, to the actual question. But I think that, you know, on the road it's going to be, you know, the crowd's going to be there. I think if he's able early to get the offense going and make some good throws, I think he's going to set himself up for a good game. But I think if he starts again like he did against SMU, maybe throwing a pick or making a bad decision, I think it's going to be tough for him to kind of have a really bounce back performance, especially on the road. But that's just me. Next question is
Fig One.
What is the situation with Isaiah Lewis? Is he enrolled? I didn't see him listed on your rival's roster.
Yes, he's enrolled. Yes, we have not yet updated our
I don't think it's us. I think it's
rival's
Yahoo.
Roster. I don't
know, and Yahoo gets it from the official roster, and the official roster has yet to be updated with Isaiah Lewis.
Yeah.
They never even put out a press release about it, but yes, he's
enrolled. Yeah, he's enrolled. He's practicing. I've been told he actually has looked pretty good in practice. Again, he's an intriguing piece to this team, because this is a kid who, when he was a sophomore in New York, was regarded as a top 25, top 50 prospect. You know, he's not a super stocky, muscular guy, but a guy with some, gosh, I hate to say moxie or know-how or any of those like cliched gumption. You know, but a guy who will probably definitely give them a spark. I'll be really interested to see how he fits in. You know, Alani Moore will probably play a lot, and then he's gonna play, and then at some point you're bringing Josh back into the mix. I think that's gonna be a common theme this year. How do all these guys blend in? How does Fran Dunphy dole out minutes? But yes, he's enrolled, he's practicing, he's with the team.
Next question comes from Joe Becca on the message board. The question, can you offer any insight as to whether Trey Lowe is looking at either A, recovery lasting more than just this upcoming season, or B, his career being over due to his injuries?
I mean, I think it's probably just, I know this sounds like a cop-out, but it's probably unfair to speculate on that. The kid was in a serious car accident. He's redshirting this year. I'm not surprised. He's continuing to work. He's continuing to rehab. But without having talked to Trey on the record, off the record, I would not be offered. I wouldn't be able to offer a fair answer. I mean, again, serious injury, was in a car accident. I know he's been rehabbing really, really hard and wants to play again. I think it's obviously smart to redshirt him this year, but I really don't know. I mean, a couple people I've talked to are familiar with the situation, saying with his recovery, when it comes, it's going to come. But he's not at 100% yet, so it's really kind of up in the air. I don't even think Trey himself knows what his outlook is, other than he's just going to continue to work and rehab.
Next question comes from Jack McLaughlin on Twitter. The question, this 2017 basketball recruiting class is Temple's best since when? I think if you're going, it's we were talking about this before the air, it's kind of strange because you're literally predicting a class based upon paper, right? So then the question becomes, do you do this based upon paper? Do you say the best recruiting class based upon how that class looked on paper, or do you say it based upon how they played? On paper, it might be the best class since Dingle, DeGosey, Watson. but only one of those guys who really panned out, who knows what Dingle's going to do his senior year. Talent-wise, it's probably the boys' class, right?
Yeah, so that 2007 class was Ramon Moore, Lavoie Allen, Michael Eric, Martavis Key, and Craig Williams. Now, Martavis Key, when he was recruited, the promising left-handed guard out of Florida, I remember Fran saying, like, his leftiness reminds me of Lynn Greer.
And the fact that he is left-handed.
Yeah. Martavis Key did not work out here, transferred down to where?
FIU, played for FIU. Isaiah and Thomas.
Yeah, just his career never got going. Craig Williams was a kid from the Virgin Islands who had come to a John Chaney basketball camp, and Chaney kind of recommended him on his way out the door to Fran, you know, when he was somewhat in shape and didn't have foot issues. Good sophomore year, was a guy who could you know, step out and hit threes, and then after that, conditioning was an issue.
But he ended up at TCU and had a pretty decent season.
And let's just note, Craig Williams, remember what happened during that Kansas blowout at the Leah Cora Center? I forget what year that is. I guess it was Craig Williams.
No, was that 2011? No, it would have been 2009.
Kansas was number one.
Yeah,
came
yeah,
in
yeah.
With
and they came in and just crushed. Yeah, that was Leafs freshman year.
And I forget who threw Craig the pass, but Craig just got hit right in the face with the ball.
Yeah.
And then Fran pulled him, and then his career at Temple was basically over.
Yeah.
But then Craig Williams, though, 8 points a game at Tech, at TCU his senior year.
But that group of, so Ramon, Lavoie, and Mike Eric, I mean, they were the backbone of that, you know, that when the program really started to take off in the A-10, three straight A-10 titles. Ramon was from Southern and had the early academic issues, rebounded and turned into obviously a very good college guard, played internationally for a little while, and Lavoie becomes the program's all-time lead rebounder.
He's still playing internationally.
Yeah. And Mike Eric, who's still playing professionally, I believe he's in Spain now, but you know, you got two good centers out of that class.
Yeah, you got an NBA player. Your program's only NBA.
Yeah, so I think that would have to be the one class that panned out. Again, you know, rankings wise, this class may not be up there in terms of, like, you know, you got one top 150 guy, but who knows?
Yeah, and that class with, I guess, what was that, 2008, 2009 maybe, with Rolier, Hollis, Jefferson, and Khalif Wyatt? That was a pretty good class.
That's just too. A small class, too. Wasn't that the only two people in that class?
Yeah, 2009 was Rolier and Khalif. I mean, two, you know, and again, it's funny, according to Rivals, Khalif was a two-star guy with offers from, I think, like, Drexel and Delaware and LaSalle at that point. Turned out to be a fantastic player. Again, for these guys, as long as, you know, they pass the eye test, they have a chance to contribute, and they're tough guys that can be program changers, you know. We'll see.
You know what other recruit Temple got in 2007? Well, 6-foot white guy from
Kyle Gass.
Kyle Gass. Good.
What happened to him?
Taco Bell was still in the student center at that point. he ate his way out.
It's constantly winded.
I literally entered Temple $1.35.
Really?
$1.35. By the time I graduated, I was like $1.75, and now I'm pushing $2. So the trend is...
Came in with a lot of promise,
I did.
Had opportunities to go other places.
I was like a corner shooting guy. If I was 9 inches taller, I would have been on that team. All right. Our final mailbag question for this week comes from at EJ Keck on Twitter. The question, how big of an impact will Sean Chandler's injury have heading into Temple's next four games, Memphis, Central Florida, South Florida, and Cincinnati?
Big impact. It's your best defensive pack.
Yeah, he's a rest defensive back. I think the one kind of silver lining is Nate L. Smith has played a lot for you. He started, I think, 6 games last year. He played as a sophomore. He's a talented guy coming out of Wood. And he had that interception against SMU. Like, he's the type of guy that he's not Sean Chandler, but Nate L. Smith and Delvon Randall aren't the. You could be in a lot worse situations.
Sure.
Yeah, they're lucky to have the depth that they do, but it's definitely a big loss, especially going into conference play. You're going to be facing Memphis, Cincinnati, UCF, USF. Those are all teams that can air it out. So losing your best defensive back, one of the best playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, that's a really, really big loss.
It kind of limits Phil Snow a little bit, too, going forward. When you're facing those four wides and those five wides, all of a sudden you don't have a guy in Chandler who, okay, you have a safety out there, but in reality he's basically a cornerback. So
right.
Like he kind of played a little nickel corner for them. And it's going to be just, if knock on wood, you know, if Archel Foster or Derek Thomas or Nate Harrison get dinged up, all of a sudden you're really, your depth is almost non-existent at that point. You're really pushing a lot of pressure on somebody like Linwood Crump or somebody like Saquon Jefferson who's barely played.
Yeah, and you're going to be... Go ahead, John.
No, I was just going to say, the other thing is we don't know. I mean, it sounds... I mean, at one point, didn't Matt say he could be out for the year, but now it's just indefinitely, so it sounds like several
after
weeks, but we don't know how long.
After the SMU game, he's like, it could be 3 weeks, it could be the year. It entirely depends on how his body responds. So.
And we do not know what the injury is, but Sean was walking around. We saw him on Tuesday, so he was walking around.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a knee. I think Rule after the SMU game said something
I think it was a knee.
They didn't say what it was, but he said, like,
I'd say, like,
I don't know. Rule was asked about it on Monday on the teleconference, and he was asked for an update, said he's out for Memphis and wouldn't comment any further.
And then on Tuesday, said he's out indefinitely.
Then you get 10 days after that. It's not to say that his knee's going to magically be healthy, but you get a little bit of extended period.
Who do you guys think is, like, the key player on Temple's defense for the game against Memphis on Thursday? Tomorrow night, actually.
I still think it might be Hassan Reddick.
Yeah.
I think Reddick had a beast of a game against SMU, one of those games that, like, even against Penn State, you look at it, it's one of those games where it was more obvious with SMU just how good of a game he was having, but then you actually look at his box score, and you're like, wow, like, he forced two fumbles. He had two sacks. Like, he's just finally starting to show, like, hey, I'm a defensive end. I run a 4-4.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I think if he's able to actually get in right Ferguson's face, Ferguson's not the most mobile in the world. Mm-hmm. If he's able to get disruption, then it doesn't really matter how bad your secondary is if you're knocking the quarterback down that quickly.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. I mean, if he gets to the quarterback and forces a couple of turnovers or affects the game in that way, that's how, you know, that's how you win on the road, by affecting the game in that way and creating turnovers. I mean, he's surpassed praise as the best, you know, pass rusher on the team, and he's played it.
With Chandler out, he might be their best player on defense. That might not even be close.
Yeah, yeah, the type of speed he has, and he's been doing it for a while now. I mean, you know, he really established himself in that Penn State game last year. I mean, he was a guy that really, you know, going back to last year in that Notre Dame game, had a critical play where Notre Dame was about to go up, could have been going up 14-3. He gets pressure on Deshaun Kizer, he throws that pick to praise. I mean, he's the one guy that you have that can consistently get to the quarterback. He can kind of go inside, he can speed rush outside. And so if he produces a big play like that early on, that makes all the difference on the road, I would say.
Thank you, all of our scoopers out there that are...
Scoopers.
The scoopers.
Scoopers. Ice cream enthusiasts.
I'd like to thank all the scoopers out there for listening this week, and we will talk to you next Wednesday.